From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. And this is On Point. Berries are ripe for the picking right now, and one of the best ways to enjoy them is in a homemade pie. Whether it's a summer fruit pie or one of the Thanksgiving pumpkin variety, pie has a rich history as part of the American dessert culture. From the all-American apple pie to the fancier chocolate bourbon pecan pie, nothing says comfort, nostalgia, and home better than a piece of pie. This hour on Point, an American tradition, pies. Joining me now from Woodstock, New York, is Willa Zenn, professor of food anthropology at the Culinary Institute of America. Willa Zenn, thanks for coming to On Point.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Joining me from member station WAER in Syracuse is Beth Howard, pie baker, author of Ms. American Pie, Butter Good Pie Recipes, and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. She teaches classes on pie baking out of her home in the American Gothic House in Eldon, Iowa, as well as around the world. She also blogs about pies at theworldneedsmorepie.com. Beth Howard, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, John.
And with me in studio today is Renee McLeod. She's the owner of Pizzi Pies in Somerville, Massachusetts, which has been named one of the top 10 best places for pie by the food magazine Bon Appetit. Renee McLeod, congratulations on that, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Willa, I want to get the long view, the big picture from you, because people say that apple pie is quintessentially American. Is pie quintessentially American? Did we invent pie?
Unfortunately not. It's become very much associated with American culture and our American sayings, but pie actually has a very long global history that expands beyond us in the Americas. And we have different records and sources, and there's a lot of different speculation. It's often hard to know the exact starting point of a dish, but there's some speculations dating pie back to the ancient Egyptians. Not pie as we know it today, but some pie-like item, a pastry crust of some sort holding food inside of it. So there's some accounts of it going back to ancient times. Some of the earliest recorded evidence of it goes back actually to the Romans. And what we have here is actually Cato recording a dish in his agricultural treatise, De Agricultura, and talks about this vaguely pie-like dish. We would probably consider it more like cheesecake. And, of course, that itself raises up questions of is it pie or cake or other. But
what is your ruling on that?
Oh, well, I would have to say it's a little bit more pie-like, but others may disagree with me.
I personally happen to make an excellent two-layer cheesecake myself.
Oh, well, you're
but I was
to
told by the but the producers on the show when we were discussing earlier said no, that is cake.
Well, it depends on what you think of it. I mean, that's part of the problem with pie is how you define it, what you define it like. And there's a lot of different definitions. Does it have to have a crust, double crust?
They also ruled out pizza, by the way.
Pizza pie is not, I mean, it's not really a pie because it's baked on a bread dough, really, technically. It's when we think of pies, there's all sorts of permutations and versions. We here in the United States think of pie, particularly apple pie and sweet pies and dessert pies, as pie. But if you go other places, it was often savory, or it still is savory. I mean, even in the American culinary canon, we have shepherd's pie, which is savory, chicken pot pie, to name two examples.
Renee McLeod, I posed the question in the intro to the segment, why do we like pies so much? Which seems to me now, as I say it again, a really dumb question, because we know why we like pies. It's really, they're really, really good.
They're really delicious. You can put anything in a pie crust. We can make a sweet pie or a savory pie.
Does that make them bad for us automatically? Is that by definition they're bad for us?
As bad for us as butter is bad for us. I don't think they're bad for you. We often eat pies for breakfast. We'll have a fruit pie for breakfast, and everyone uses it's just like having a bowl of fruit, a sprinkling of sugar, a little bit of butter.
I sort of like that. In fact, it's making me terribly hungry. And Beth Howard, we have your apple pie right here. And because we are quintessentially American on this show, I'm going to take a big bite of it at the moment. I'll give you my verdict.
That's really unfair to your listeners, John.
Excellent, Beth. Talk about that pie. What's the most Beth Howardy thing about that Beth Howard pie?
made with butter for sure. The crust, I always use butter in the crust, and I use
that's
my
controversial,
bare hands.
Isn't it?
I don't think it needs to be. I always tell people you can use whatever fat you want in your, you know, to mix in with your flour and your water. It's a personal choice, but I like the taste of the butter, and I think it makes for a very flaky crust. I leave my butter in big chunks, bigger than your average baker would do, and I make it by hand, and that way, like a food processor will make your butter too fine and the whole mixture too fine. And I add plenty of water to hold everything together. So my whole thing is the approach is really that it's handmade with plenty of butter, leave it in big chunks. And I like a hearty pie. You know, that pie was shipped to you all the way from the American Gothic House in Eldon, Iowa. So it was, I like to say that, you know, pie is hearty like the pioneers, you know. It's a sturdy dessert, and it traveled cross-country just to get to your studio. I hope it still tastes all right.
Renee, you're as much of an expert as anybody on this. How many stars does that pie get?
Four.
Four? Out of how many? Five?
Out of four.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
You maxed out.
This is one of the best apple pies I have ever tasted. I'm not even kidding.
Renee. Oh, my God. I love you. Thank you.
It's perfect.
No,
don't use that word perfect. I don't want people to think pie has to be perfect. Pie is not about perfection. It should be homemade.
Well,
it should be a little flawed.
Perfectly imperfect.
Beth, I wanted to follow up for that reason because am I right that in reading the notes, you said that you don't measure so precisely and you kind of don't follow recipes and you sort of make it up as you go along? Am I right about that?
That's true. And that's how a lot of our grandmothers and great grandmothers baked. And, you know, I wrote this cookbook and they forced me to put numbers in the recipes. I'm like, I don't know, a little shake, shake, shake of the salt, a little shake, shake, shake of the cinnamon. And, you know, how many apples, everybody asks me, how many apples does it take? I'm like, I don't know. How big are your apples? How big is your pie dish? You know, that there's so many variables. So it's
but
really
now that's
hard
scary.
To be held to numbers.
Beth, that is kind of scary to me because I'm somebody who I don't think I have a natural talent for cooking, but I like to cook, and I feel like I need the security and the sense of limits that recipes impose. How do you, like, when you take the approach that you said, do you accept the fact that many of the things that you create, you're going to throw out because they're not very good, and you just take that as trial and error experimentation?
I don't throw things out. I salvage them with a little ice cream on the side if I forgot to, you know, if I didn't put enough sugar in it. Well, just add some ice cream. You know, if it's too salty, well, I don't know. I think pretty much people will eat whatever kind of pie. One time I made a chess pie, forgot to put the sugar in it, completely forgot. So that turned into a savory pie, and, you know, then it tasted like a little bit of a polenta side dish. You know, it was salvageable. So
was it good?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it tasted okay. It wasn't what it was supposed to be, but that's all right. I believe in improvisation and what Willa was saying. You know, you can just basically put anything in a crust, so it doesn't really matter. Your producer was asking me what kind of berries do I use in the mixed berry pie. I'm like, hey, whatever berries you can get. You know, that's the whole point. You just throw in whatever you've got. You can mix all kinds of stuff.
Renee, do you freelance in that way? Or are you somebody who tends to make the same thing over and over and follow a set of rules?
In the summer, it goes a little crazy. But I follow a lot of rules because I have a bakery and I need to show everyone. We measure everything. We weigh everything. When I first started, I had a metal measuring cup that my great-grandmother gave me. And that's how she showed me how to make pie crust. It wasn't a measuring cup. It was just a cup. And I just, three cups and four cups. And I had to figure it out. But we measure everything now.
Willa, as an...
I'm nodding, Renee, because that's so sweet. Like, that's exactly how grandmothers bake. People always say, my grandma never taught me because she didn't really follow a recipe. And that's so sweet that you had that cup, that memory.
Willa, as an anthropologist, when you think about American bakers, are more of them in the, I know what I'm doing, I'm an artist, I will riff this pie, or more people who say, I need to go online, I need to go to the website, I need to get the exact specifications?
Oh gosh, it's a tall order. It depends. It's a very personal thing. I think with pies, there's definitely a sense of intimacy in baking it, as the others have described, you know.
Different from other foods?
In many ways, I think very different than a cake. Cakes can be a lot more fussy. You know, there's whipping the cream or there's making the frosting and the icing. With pies, it's, okay, well, these berries look beautiful at the farmer's market or at the grocery store or at the farm stand. You know, let's grab some of that. Let's play with this. I think pies lend themselves a little bit more to improvisation and to that freedom and that imperfection that was mentioned earlier. But you have both. You definitely have both who are stick to the recipe types as well as people who are let's play. But I think pies lend themselves a little bit more to that playfulness.
Are more pies consumed, Willa, in the United States by that are bought from bakeries or that people make themselves?
Well, it's hard to say, once again, because pies are very personal. It's hard to know exact numbers, but there's definitely both going on. And there's both at-home pies as well as bought pies.
Stay right there. Renee McLeod, Willa Zenn, Beth Howard. We're talking about the tradition of American pies. Listeners, you can join the conversation. Do you see the tradition in pie making? What is your connection to it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here's Pie for Breakfast by the Brothers Comatose. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. I'm having pie for breakfast. The snow's coming down, staring out the window in a cold and distant town. I'm having pie for breakfast. The snow's coming down. This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about pies, cherry pies, strawberry pies, pecan pies, pumpkin pies, and the American tradition that pies come with. We have got some wonderful-looking pies in the studio, as well as pie experts. With me, Willa Zenn, professor of food anthropology at the Culinary Institute of America, Beth Howard, pie maker and author of Ms. American Pie, Butter Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House, and Renee McLeod, pie baker and owner of Pizzi Pies, a bakery in Somerville, Massachusetts. You can find recipes for some of the pies made by our guests today on our website, onpointradio.org. I want to start by showing ways in which the pie culture has seeped into popular culture. This is from season 5 of Seinfeld. Elaine, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, overhears Jerry Seinfeld complaining that his girlfriend wouldn't taste his favorite apple pie.
I'm sorry. There's no reason for her not to taste that pie.
Who wouldn't taste the pie?
Audrey.
Dumper.
Well, I never broke up with anyone for not tasting pie.
I once broke up with someone for not offering me pie.
All right, Renee, I do not want you to break up with me. So I'm going to eat your cherry pie right at this moment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Quick question on the recipe. That's really yummy. I'm sorry, listeners. sour cherries. What is distinctive about sour cherries as opposed to other kind of cherries that you would put in a pie?
They're so tart, and they have a super cherry flavor. You can only get the good ones in Michigan, and we love them. You add a little bit of sugar.
Are you from Michigan?
No, but...
That's not home state bias talking.
No, the cherries are from Michigan.
Right, but you're saying you can only get the good cherries from Michigan.
You can only get the good cherries from Michigan.
Do you make all of the pies that are sold at Pizzi Pies, or do you have a team of other people?
I have bakers. I wish I could make every pie. I love baking pies, and I try to make pies, and I have other things to do.
Mm-hmm. Got a business to run. All right, let's go to the phones. We've got Rodney on the line from South Wayne, Wisconsin. Rodney, welcome to the show. And what is your pie question or pie comment?
Hi there. First off, my favorite pie is strawberry rhubarb. I don't know. I really like it a lot. I love the tartness of it. Also wanted to ask... As far as pies go, I know they mentioned that Egyptians had pies, but did other cultures also develop their own style of pie, like Native Americans or, people from Europe or, I'm sure in Europe, but in Asia and so forth? And if you can let me know that, I'm actually quite interested in that.
Well, we are going to find out because we got somebody who knows. Willa Zenn, what do you say? Are there very continental variations all across the world? And what are some of them?
Oh, definitely. Oh, gosh. Pies are much loved nowadays all over the planet. But if we want to think historically in the historical trajectory, we believe that, you know, pies might have come up, a pie-like thing. It's not as what we know it today. A pie-like thing, something with a case of pastry, often some sort of grain and some sort of binding material. It would have been water or later on oils, eventually later fats and butters. There is something like that in antiquity. If we look at some recorded evidence of pies, definitely the English. If we look at Old English cookbooks, for instance, one of the classic Old English cookbooks we have from the 14th century, we've got an apple pie recipe in there. It's actually from around the 14th century, 1390s or so. This is the form of curry. It's written by what it listed as the authors, the master chief cooks of King Richard II. They've got, you know, let's put in good apples and some good spices and figs and raisins and pears and a coffin pastry. And what a coffin pastry was is really just water and flour, grains. And to bind it in, you have some saffron as a filling and you cook it off. Right, so you've got that going on in definitely England, parts of Europe. Pies are very much popular in the medieval period and Renaissance later on. And if we fast forward in history and move forward and forward and forward, pies are very much global nowadays. One of the very not something that we think of as a pie, but definitely if you go to any McDonald's around the world, they have that apple pie or some variation hand pie on their menus. If you go to say the Philippines, they've got it made that pie with taro or pineapple or mango. So pies go back to antiquity, but today you find them all over on the planet. Of course, we very much view them as Americans, even though the Europeans, particularly the English, definitely view it as part of their foods too.
I have to say, Willa, when I was a kid, I used to eat all the time the McDonald's cherry pie. I fear from what I've read that they are so bad for you that are so like larded up with stuff that it may not be advisable. And I can tell you that they're no match for Renee McLeod's sour cherry pie. That's for sure. Now, Beth Howard, we just heard about strawberry rhubarb. Where does that rank in your hierarchy of pies?
That's number one.
Really?
In terms of, yes, in the area where I've been selling pies out of the American Gothic House in the summers, my little pitchfork pie stand, and that's the number one pie. That one flies out the door.
What's the balance?
I can't get enough rhubarb.
What's the balance between strawberry and rhubarb in the pie?
To me, it doesn't matter. I kind of try to go half and half or two-thirds strawberry, one-third rhubarb. But it's hard to get rhubarb. That's the problem. So when I ran out of rhubarb, then I switched to just plain strawberry, which isn't a pie that you see very often. But then I added a crumble topping to that, and then that's become my number one pie, then the strawberry crumble, which is actually one of my favorites now.
There's no shortage of people who want to talk about pies, much less eat them. We've got Jonathan on the line from Waltham, Massachusetts. Jonathan, go right ahead.
Hi. Trying not to be too jealous of you guys eating pie. I love to bake pies, but one of the problems that I often have is that my crust is too mushy. And I'm just wondering, what am I doing wrong? How do you, make sure that you get that nice crisp crust on the bottom of your pie?
Renee, help Jonathan out.
If it's a pie that you're going to pre-bake the crust, it depends. So it could be that your oven's not hot enough, and it could be the sort of pie you're making needs a par-baked crust. So you just would put some beans or something down in the bottom of the pie shell, bake it for 10 minutes, crisp it up a little, and then put your filling in. Or it could be, like I said, the oven's not hot enough. Try 15 more degrees.
Joyce, we have Joyce on the line from Woniwok, Wisconsin. Joyce, welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. I just wanted to say how much the program today touches my heart. We have six grown and growing children, and when they come home for the holidays or whatever, they don't necessarily always ask, but many times they will request a particular pie. And the wild berries that we pick around here in Wisconsin, especially the black cap or I think it's called the black raspberry, they're a favorite no matter where we go or who comes to visit. And I love the perfect imperfection part that your guest talks about, because I believe that's what pie making is all about. I work in assisted living, and what you haven't touched on is what's called the mincemeat pie. And
you make one?
A mincemeat.
Do you make one?
I do.
And what's in it?
We can our own. Well, here you go. This is the part the young people say yuck about other people. It's green tomatoes, apples, raisins, currants, cooked and ground either venison or beef, and then you have your cloves, your cinnamon, vinegar and sugar. It sounds terrible to people, but it's so delicious.
Is that a family recipe or one that you got out of a cookbook?
No, it's kind of a family recipe. I don't know if it came from a cookbook long ago, but my mother-in-law, I think the one I really use is her recipe, and my 30-year-old loved it from babyhood on, and my husband, the only one he hadn't been real particular about, now he likes it too. Of course, we usually have that one in the fall. It's so autumnal, and the residents where I work, when we have a pie bake, it's so reminiscent for them of days gone by. I don't think there's one that does not like it. They love it, and I don't know, like I said, it just touches my heart, your program. It's like, I don't know if it's a lost art, or I don't want it to become a lost art, but pie baking, and my 8-year-old granddaughter, last Christmas, we got her 4 little pie tins, and she bakes her pies when she comes to Grandma's. And I have a wheel I'm actually holding in my hand. It's a decorative wheel. I don't know if you know about it. It would be very old. You can make the little cuts on top, and then on the 2 flat sides, it's like a flowery cut. It looks like flowers on there, and people are so impressed with that.
Well, Joyce, it does not sound like a lost art in your household. thanks so much for your call.
Can I ask her one thing?
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
My mother, when people would come, one of her mainstays that she served was apple pie with a slice of cheese on the plate. And I've heard, ooh, and I've heard, oh, yeah, that's you know, kind of traditional. So if she would talk about that.
Renee, what about it? Cheese with pie? And then secondly, does Pizzi's sell a mincemeat pie?
We sell a mincemeat pie, but it doesn't have any meat in it. We sell a mincemeat pie that's lots of fruit.
Isn't that false advertising? What's the meat? If there's no meat, how can it be a mincemeat pie?
Fruit meats. No, we walnut meats. We put nuts in ours. And apple pie with a sharp cheddar is so delicious.
Beth, are you down with that? Cheddar with apple pie?
I think it's a Wisconsin thing. I also think it's, you know, taste is very subjective. If you want cheese, have the cheese. You know, that's okay. But I do think that's a very Wisconsin thing. My mom's from Wisconsin, so I have that experience. There's recipes out there for apple pie with a cheddar cheese crust. So they've really not just embraced the cheese, but they've incorporated it into the pie itself.
All right, let's go to another caller. Mary is on the line from Franklin, Virginia. Mary, welcome to On Point. And the pie show.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I have a comment about grandmothers and baking. When I was 10 years old, coming up for my 10th birthday, my grandmother asked me what I wanted for my birthday. And I told her I would like to have a deep dish apple pie. And she made me her famous, delicious deep dish apple pie just for me.
That sounds pretty good.
Oh, it was delicious. And I will have that memory until the day I die.
Do you make a deep dish apple pie now yourself?
No. No. I wish I had her recipe, but once again, she didn't write down a whole lot of things.
Mary, thanks so much for your call. It's a wonderful story. Willie, you heard the accent there, and it brought to mind the question of regional variations. If you travel to the South, you're going to find a much different repertoire of pies than if you go to the West Coast or the Northeast.
Oh, absolutely. And I think out of Americans, broadly speaking, Southerners are definitely serious pie people. You can't beat a Southerner at the pie game because they've got such interesting variations on pies. And also the Pennsylvania Dutch, too, have a lot of really neat pies that are part of their culinary cooking traditions. So things that are down south, you know, fun stuff like Mississippi mud pie, supposedly named because the way it looks, it's all this chocolate, looks like the mud of the Mississippi River.
I had one recently when I went down to cover the Mississippi Senate race.
Oh, my gosh. How was it?
It was honestly a little much for me.
That's what it's supposed to be. It's that indulgence and that thick chocolate in that. You've got all these great pies that are just particularly known for certain areas. Pecan pie, another regional pie, definitely associated with Southern cooking. Sweet potato pie, also very much associated with Southern cooking and especially soul food. And then you've also got other things like chess pie, very much associated with New England and Virginia. You've got shoe fly pie, which is very much associated with the Pennsylvania Dutch, made of molasses, and it's this sweet, treacly thing, and it's also a very different regional pie. You don't see those out on the West Coast. If you're on the West Coast, I'm a West Coaster by origin, and there it's a mixture of pies, a lot of fruit pies, a lot of cream pies, and it's your personal pie preference is both personal as well as influenced by where you grew up and where you may have ended up and those regional influences along the way.
Willa, for the pie illiterate, could you explain what chess pie is?
Well, chess pie is a funky one. It's found commonly in New England and Virginia, although, of course, pie spread. And it is got a crust on it. It's got eggs, brown sugar, vanilla. It's kind of custardy. And the thing that's about it that's really neat is that it's got cornmeal, which is, if you don't do it quite right, it can actually end up polenta-like. So it's a tricky pie to get.
All right, Beth Howard, I don't want you to break up with me either, so I am going to taste your mixed berry pie right now, which is sitting in front of me just begging me to eat it. Yum. Tell me about the berries in there. You said you pick whatever you have, but what did you put in there?
It was supposed to be a strawberry pie, but I ran out of strawberries, so I added some blueberries. So that's my version of mixed berry pie. I like to normally have.
Wait, does that mean
blueberries?
You started with strawberry rhubarb, you had no rhubarbs, and then you looked for strawberries and you didn't have strawberries either?
Rhubarb is out of season. And I made a whole bunch of pies, and I wasn't sort of allotting my ingredients just quite right. So by the time I got around to that, I didn't want to send you all crumble toppings. So by the time I got around to filling the double crust pies, I'm like, I guess I ran out of strawberries to make just a plain strawberry double crust. So I added some blueberries and then put the top crust on. It would have been nice to have some other extra berries in there, but do you care? No, you don't. You see, pie is not about perfection. You can just improvise, throw whatever you have in there, and it's all good.
Renee McLeod, tell me about your clientele. Who are your biggest customers? Older people, younger people?
It's all over the map. Because of where we are, a lot of students, and they come and say it reminds them of grandma.
Or is pie getting hip?
Pie is pretty hip. Pie has been hip for a while. It's right in there with the cupcakes, and we make adorable little pies.
That's interesting because you saw that cupcake company recently go out of business. That a little more room for pizzas there.
Yes, and a lot of people are having pies at their weddings now, which is fun.
All right, Willa Zenn, professor of food anthropology at the Culinary Institute of America. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're talking about pies of all sorts at this hour. Listeners, join in. What's your family tradition of pie making? What's your secret trick or ingredient? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And here's Quincy Coleman with Baby Don't You Cry from the 2007 movie Waitress. I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the rich and tasty history of pies with some pie experts. We're joined this hour by Beth Howard, pie maker and author of her new book, Ms. American Pie, Buttergood Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the American Gothic House. and Renee McLeod, owner of Pizzi Pies, a bakery in Somerville, Massachusetts. And I want to bring in one more great baker today. Joining me from Washington is Marla Romash, pastry chef and owner of Marla's Magic, a bakery and catering business in Washington, formerly communications director for Vice President Al Gore. Her blog on politics and pastries for the Huffington Post is called Just Dessert. Marla Romash, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
Marla, before going to you, I want to play this clip from the 2008 campaign when then-Senator Barack Obama talks about searching for a snack with the governor of Ohio on the campaign trail.
We went to Georgetown, Ohio, in southern Ohio, because we were hungry and we needed a snack. So we pulled up to this diner where people told us that we could get some good pie. And I like pie.
So, Marla, you know politicians. Are they just faking it out in the middle of the country when they say I like pie? Or back in Washington, do they like it?
I can tell you, having catered many events for many politicians, that they like pie. Because who doesn't like pie?
What is a classic political pie?
Oh, you know, I think there's the classic political pie on the table and the classic political pie rhetorically, of course. And they're both apple. The classic all-American pie is apple.
Nice. All right, I want to take another call. We have Paige on the line from Columbia, Tennessee. Paige, go right ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you how much I'm enjoying your program. And I want to get one thing straight with y'all. People in Middle Tennessee will tell you that the absolute best chess pie is made right here. So much for Virginia. It's Tennessee. We've got the chess pie. But what I wanted to mention, I grew up, my mother was quite a good cook, and one of my favorite pies was a real old-fashioned lemon meringue pie. And I haven't heard that mentioned. Also, chocolate meringue pie was very popular. She made the crust. Now, I don't know for sure that I can tell you right. I want to say she put chicken fat in it, or lard, and it was the most delicious crust you ever put your mouth to. It was wonderful. And I don't know whether your hostess could comment on that or not. But oh, and the mincemeat pie. She made a delicious mincemeat pie, but around here, people put suet, and still do.
But they did have meat. Renee makes a mincemeat pie light, or a faux mincemeat pie.
I don't think mincemeat pie is quite so popular as it once was, but it's a Thanksgiving specialty. You know, it was in our household.
Paige, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate it. Now, Marla, Paige surfaces a little controversy here, and you being a Washingtonian, we might have to have a little debate about it. He talked about chicken fat in the crust. Beth Howard favors butter in the crust. My understanding is that you think butter is a mistake in a pie crust.
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's a mistake. I wouldn't be as unpolitic to say that. But I have to your Middle Tennessee caller, John, as you know, I spent a fair amount of time in Tennessee myself, and he's right about the chess pie in Tennessee. And he's right also in that in the time I spent in Tennessee, I learned so much about baking not just pies, but biscuits and a whole lot of things. But he's right about Tennessee and chess pie, so I'll start there. But my favorite pie crust is a shortening pie crust. And I know my grandmother and others would, as he said, bake with lard, would bake with chicken fat and other things. Butter, I'm not against it. I love butter. But I still think that for pie crust, shortening is the way to go.
Renee?
Butter and shortening, half and half, makes a beautiful pie crust. Butter flavor, flaky shortening.
Now, that is a mushy, moderate view if I ever heard one.
Well, more and more, John, you're getting people with different dietary requirements. So I'm getting a lot of requests for vegan things now, for example. And so a pie crust with shortening passes the test, and a pie crust with butter doesn't. So more and more, I'm finding I'm leaning towards shortening and leaving out the butter because of that.
All right, I'm going to go to a call again. We've got a lot of people who want to talk about pies. I wonder why. Bob is on the line from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Bob, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Hey, I got a quick question, and I think they just answered some of it, but it was because of dietary issues. I don't eat butter nor sugar. So what can I use for a sugar substitute and a butter substitute? And by the way, my favorite kind of pie is either hot or cold.
That's right. Mine too. Beth Howard, okay, you like butter, but if you can't have butter, and if you like sugar, but you can't have sugar, what do you use?
I say use whatever works for you and your dietary needs. I am not, you know, adamant about any one ingredient or lack of ingredient. I just, you know, whatever works for you. I live in a place where we have a lot of vegetarians as well, so that's why I don't use lard. I use the I'm with Renee on half butter, half shortening. But if you have dietary needs and you still love pie and you want to eat that pie, I highly encourage you to, you know, find your own substitutes. And you know,
what's a substitute for sugar?
Well, that's a tough one for me. I don't know. I just probably wouldn't. I would use a very ripe fruit that was already naturally very sweet. You know, there have been times where I've had people helping me and we made strawberry pie and they forgot to put the sugar. And now strawberries can be very tart, but they can also, if they're very ripe, they can also be very, very sweet. Same with peaches. If you use a very ripe fruit, it's already got a lot of its own natural sugar in it. So you probably could get away with not using any extra sugar at all. The fruit has the sugar itself.
The other thing you could think about, John, it's Marla, is fruit juices sometimes. And the sugar in a pie comes from two different places. Some people will put a little bit of sugar in the dough and then sugar in the filling. In the dough, it's trickier because you don't want to fool around too much with the texture and the consistency of the dough. So the easiest solution would be to go to a fake sweetener like an aspartame or something like that. But in the filling, I would say, you know, play around with applesauce, play around with fruit juices. There's lots of other things that could give it that kind of sweetness.
Terrific idea. Let's go to another call. Pam's on the line from New Orleans, Louisiana. Pam, I have a daughter down at Tulane, so I'm well acquainted with what wonderful food you can get in New Orleans. What's your comment, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Well, I just wanted to go back to the measuring discussion that you had earlier. I rarely measure. The only time I measure is if I'm going out of the house and the cake is going to someone that I don't know. But I specifically will just eye it up, and I usually start from dry and go to wet and then work on consistency, you know, as far as like batter or as far as like filling. I never measure for filling either. There's also like pie filling, like little containers of pie filling in my fridge, like over the course of a month, and then I'll just mix them all together and make like a whatever pie.
I'm impressed by your confidence. Have you ever been burned by that approach?
I've had some failures, but I've also like taken those failures and like crumpled them up and put them into something else. Like I've had like fallen cakes and I've just like mixed them in with ice cream, like, you know, add a little ice cream. It makes it great. And I lived on a tall ship for several years. Just one more story. I lived on a tall ship for a couple of years and I would bake all the time and we never had measurements. I had a mug and like a teaspoon and a teaspoon and those were like my measurements. And that's how I worked.
Terrific comment, Pam. Thanks so much. Marla Romesh, we know everybody in Washington, D.C. follows all the rules all the time. Are you somebody who works strictly off a recipe, or are you like our caller?
Well, I do a little of both, but I have to say my husband is a chef, and we have a very funny time in the kitchen because when we're doing something together and it'll say a cup of something, I, of course, will run for the measuring cup, and he will just grab whatever cup is close by. So I tend to look at the recipe and follow the recipe. I think pastry chefs in general are known for being a little bit anal about stuff. And there's a chemistry involved in some of this, not as much in pie baking as in cakes and other things. So you have to be a little careful when you're fooling around with baking powder and baking soda and you're trying to get a rise out of something and all the rest. But I do freelance a lot because you can't, particularly with pies. You have to. You try, throw a nut in, throw a dried fruit in, try something different on the crust.
That's what being an artist is all about, isn't it?
You know, it's just more fun that way. And sometimes, I don't know who it was earlier in the show, was talking about whatever you have on hand. Sometimes it is a matter of whatever you have on hand. And if you've got to bake pie for somebody and you don't have any strawberries, well, maybe I'll try this recipe with blueberries, see how it comes out.
All right, let's eat a little bit right now. Now, Renee, this is a chocolate bourbon pecan pie. Can I eat this without getting drunk? Because we still have about 7 minutes of the show to go.
You'll be fine.
Okay, let's try.
Can't believe you're not sharing.
We can describe it.
Yum. Tell me what's in that pie.
bittersweet chocolate.
Mm-hmm. That's butter. Important that it's bittersweet, not semi-sweet.
Bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
Booze.
Mm-hmm. Any particular kind?
Bourbon. Well, we use...
No, but a particular brand of bourbon.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No. It cooks off enough that it's not going to make a difference if you use poor bourbon or mm-hmm. really fine bourbon. There is corn syrup in here. You can use rice syrup. Lyle's golden syrup is something mm-hmm. that my uncle always used in his. And toasted pecans.
Nice. All right, Marla, I'm going to your blueberry crumble, which I don't know if I've ever had before. So our guests know, I know Marla. I've known her from politics and also from back home in the neighborhood. And I have bought her products before, and they're quite first rate. So I'm gonna test this one. Hmm. Now tell me, Marla, about the marketing of full pies versus single serving pies, like small bite sized things, like this blueberry crumble.
What I sent you was a mini pie, and I came up with those because a lot of the work that we do in catering is receptions. And they're buffet kind of receptions where people are walking around a table of picking things up and want one bite. And of course, and they want things they don't need a fork to eat. They can just pick it up with their hand and take a bite. And I love making pie. I love making pie crust. And I thought, how do I do this so that people can have a little taste of pie when they can't take a plate and a piece and a fork and all the rest? And so I came up with these tiny little pies, and they're really meant for receptions and things like that. Someone mentioned lemon meringue pie earlier. I do small lemon meringue pies, small blueberry pies, small apple pies. And it gives people a little taste of pie without needing a fork and a whole slice.
All right, I want to get to another caller. We've got Gloria on the line from Post Mills, Vermont. Gloria, welcome to the Pie Show.
Hi, John. I'm enjoying it immensely. I was calling about my family's favorite pie, which was actually a mistake. Yes. We have a small farm, and we milk our own cows, and when we're making a lot of cheese and butter, we have a lot of buttermilk. So we found a recipe for buttermilk pie that we really enjoyed. And we started playing with it, and one day I said, how about a chocolate buttermilk pie? And when I was done baking it, it was more like a milkshake in a crust than a pie. So we decided to freeze it, and it's become our favorite summertime pie. It's delicious. It's creamy and rich and chocolatey. And so, you know, mistakes can be good.
What's the name of the pie?
We just call it frozen chocolate buttermilk pie. It's a kind of a custardy filling with a meringue topping, and I bake it like normal and then just stick it in the freezer.
Sounds like a fudgesicle.
That's exactly what it tastes like, and that's what my daughter calls it.
Beth Howard, what is the role of serendipity in making great pies?
The role of serendipity, how so? I mean, just like her, what she's talking about, her having an accident.
And, she did it by mistake. Her family's favorite pie was a mistake.
I think that's the best way. It's the joy of discovery. It is part of the art, the improvisation. That's, you know, it's coming up with your own signature pie that represents you and your family and becomes a tradition. I think that's a beautiful part about it. You know, some of my mistakes have been I froze a shaker lemon pie, which is a pie with whole lemons that you slice paper thin. And this is a little bit to her point, how, you know, you stick a pie in a freezer and then, hey, you know what? Actually, this is better frozen than it is just regular. You freeze a shaker lemon pie and then you eat it on a hot summer day. It's like a lemon shake up from the state fair right in a pie crust. So I think those joys of discovery are some of the most beautiful things about pie. And again, having a family tradition and something that becomes your own.
Renee McLeod, I want to put before you a comment by one of our listeners on Facebook, Vicki Milton. She says, I love homemade pie, but not most bakery or supermarket pies. They are so inauthentic. That sounds like a direct attack on you.
I'm not going to take it as an attack. I think that people are used to the pie you get in a supermarket, which is extra gooey and full of corn syrup. But we make pies in small batches as if you were making it at home. Our pies taste like the same pie that I would make in my kitchen one at a time. I just make a lot more of them.
Marla, are your commercial pies inauthentic?
No. And I can't tell voices, so I apologize for not knowing names. There's such a different process, even when you're making them the way we do, you know, more than one at a time, than when you're making hundreds of them at a time. That, you know, I would echo what the previous speaker said. Everything that we do, it's as I did or would have done in my kitchen at home. So I'm fooling around with 10 pounds of flour instead of 2, but it's the same process, the same recipe.
Quickly before we go, have you ever had a mistake that turned into an amazing new discovery?
I have.
Go ahead.
My mistake, we made a very lumpy-looking too many berries pie, and we put it in a waffle iron, poured some waffle batter over it, and had pie waffles.
Oh, that sounds pretty great. Beth Howard, pie maker and author of Ms. American Pie, Buttery Good Pie Recipes and Bold Tales from the Gothic House, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Renee McLeod, owner of Pizzi Pies Bakery in Somerville, Massachusetts, thank you.
Thank you.
And Marla Romash, thanks so much for Marla's magic.
Thanks, John.
Listeners, thanks to you as well. You can continue the conversation on our podcast. I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hey, little mama, can I walk you home? Ain't had no love since they used to gal been gone. Come on in my kitchen. Lord, I wish you would. Roll my eyes and shut my mouth. This rhubarb show is good. Rhubarb pie. Rhubarb pie. It might rain tomorrow. Better get some before it dies.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.